So, hey guys, we're back and we have another one for you. Today we have a guy on the phone that you're going to love the story and what he's doing and the group that he's involved in. And I can't wait to bring this one to you. Before we do that, I want to thank my friends at the Wild West History Association at wildwesthistory.org. And if you're looking for truthful Western history and you want to be part of a group and they go out and they do things, including Roundup 2024 in Fort Smith, Arkansas, then I urge you to join the Wild West History Association. They have a new membership out, a new membership, cost, $60. And that includes the journal. The journal that they're known for will be sent to you in an email, so you can keep it in a digital format. You can download it to your computer, your laptop, whatever you use, and you'll be able to read the journal whenever you want in a digital format. So if you live in Europe, you live in Australia, anywhere where shipping is really expensive or you have to wait weeks and weeks, that's all gone now with our new $60 membership, getting the journal digitally sent to you. So you may want to check into that by going to wildwesthistory.org. Also want to thank Mark and Eric over at the Tombstone Epitaph, one of Arizona's longest running newspapers at tombstoneepitaph.com. And if you're looking for a Western history, Wild West history in a newspaper format that you can take on the airplane or maybe when, you know, maybe your wife is driving or your husband's driving, you want to read it in the car. Whatever it is, wherever you're at, you want it in a newspaper format, including today, this month's February. Our guest has actually written an article called Another Boot Hill. You can do so by becoming a subscriber by going to tombstoneepitaph.com. So we have Josh Slatton on the phone, and Josh is the executive director, the head mucky muck, at a group called the Billy the Kid Coalition. You can find out what he's doing and join by going to these letters, BTK, Billy the Kid, BTK Coalition, COALITION.com, BTKCoalition.com, and you can see everything that he's doing there. We're going to talk about the projects, the website, how he got into Billy the Kid, why Billy the Kid is so important to him. And so again, if you really want to know more about what's going on, and I'll be saying during the podcast, the website quite a bit. You can find him at btkcoalition.com. You can also find him on Facebook, Facebook by searching Billy the Kid's Historical Coalition. Billy the Kid's Historical Coalition. You can find them on Facebook, and they're posting all sorts of content there. And they have a YouTube page. He'll talk to you a minute about the YouTube page. And they're doing audio interviews and digital video interviews. And they got a lot of stuff going on. But if you want to find them right now, go to btkcoalition.com. I urge you to join. I think it's about $35 a year. You get all sorts of cool stuff. And then go to the store. Go to the store because they've got t-shirts and hoodies and all sorts of cool stuff at the store. And again, that's at btkcoalition.com. So welcome, Josh. How are you?
Hey, Mike. Good to talk to you finally, brother. I know we've played phone tag a little bit. I'm glad to finally get on your show, man. Thanks.
Yeah, well, it's not really a show. Just it's a microphone and a guy sitting in his bedroom.
That's good because that's about as fancy as I am right now. So that's good to know.
So how did you get into Billy the Kid? What piqued your interest all these years ago for you to get into Billy the Kid? And before you turned it into the coalition part, and we'll talk about these projects because he's got a ton of projects they're doing. How did Billy the Kid affect you? How did you get into Billy the Kid?
Well, you know, it's a little bit of the same story that I'm sure most of your guests have told you. You know, Young Guns obviously spurred that. You know, 1988, when that came out, I was, you know, 9 or 10 years old. So that kind of started it all. I actually grew up about 45 miles north of Las Vegas, New Mexico, just north of a little town called Mora. So, you know, going to elementary school there, we always knew who Billy the Kid was, and that was always an interest of mine. And you know, when you just combine that with my love of history in general, it just kind of fit. But obviously it helped living and growing up in that area. I actually lived in Las Vegas, New Mexico, probably, 100 yards from the old plaza, you know, where Billy the Kid obviously was frequented and was held in jail there. So honestly, man, I've just been around it my entire life, and it's kind of all that I've ever known is Billy the Kid. So yeah, it's just been a passion of mine since I can remember, honestly.
So you turned a passion, though, into a website and a Facebook and a YouTube. When did that start? And when did you say, listen, this is more than just a passion? Like,
sure.
I need to share my passion, because you started the coalition and then things really got going.
Yeah, it's exploded. So when I really kind of got back into this, I'd say about 5 years ago, of course, you know, I've been doing this off and on for over 20 years, but about 5 years ago, I really kind of got the bug again and started doing some research. And honestly, it all started with Jose Chavez y Chavez. Everybody's familiar with him, obviously, from the, you know, the Young Gun movies and whatnot. And I wanted to find where he was buried at. I don't know why, but the character always intrigued me. So I started, you know, and again, this is before the coalition, and I started looking, trying to find where he was buried at. And while I was doing this research and making phone calls and all that sort of stuff, I kind of hit a lot of brick walls, just because I'm just, you know, Joe Blow making these phone calls, and a lot of people were hesitant to talk to me. So honestly, the idea kind of started as, man, if I can form like a nonprofit or something and I can do it that way, that adds a little bit of validity to it, I guess. So I spent quite a bit of time and located the grave of Jose Chavez, and we can get into that here in a minute. But when I was doing that, again, I decided that originally I reached out to another nonprofit and, you know, wanted to share my information with them and try to help them spearhead this. And they weren't overly interested, and that's okay. So, yeah, we just we got together and we formed the Billy the Kid's Historical Coalition. We created the nonprofit. It's an actual 501c. And we used that as kind of the platform to start this. So we got going that way. And our very first project that we did was marking the grave of Jose Chavez. And he is currently residing about 30 miles to the west of Santa Rosa, just south of Interstate 40.
Because when you go on your website, you've got all sorts of coalition projects that are listed. And it makes me think about the coalition projects that are not listed or not yet. So talk about the Jose Chavez one, because that seems to be the very first one that you did and really intrigued you. Talk about that, the process.
Sure.
And maybe even how you research, because you were researching the gravesite of somebody that really wasn't marked.
Yeah, man, that was probably, so we've marked four graves. So the Chavez grave was probably, well, not probably, was without a doubt the hardest one to locate and the most time consuming. Really all I kind of knew about it going into it, and that's just from talking to a few historians that are in this circle, was that he was buried in Milagro, and that his grave that you see marked on Find a Grave, and I still think it's up, there's a headstone you'll see on Find a Grave, and that's not correct. So from that point in time, I just spent a lot of time searching BLM, Bureau of Land Management records. I was able to kind of reach out to, and what kind of cracked the case for me was I was able to reach out to a local historian, Daniel Flores, who's done a lot of Guadalupe County history. And he's an older gentleman now. I'm not sure of his exact age, but he's been around long enough to where he knew a lot of the people that actually, helped mark his headstone originally and had taken it away, back in the 1970s. So when I reached out to him, he was able to give me some vague information about its location. And from that point in time, honestly, as dumb as this sounds, I spent probably 200 hours, if I'm guessing, just staring at Google Earth and just looking at that entire area, about a 10-mile square radius, until I found, believe it or not, I found a small patch of land that was a perfect square that just stood out to me, that looked different. So I kind of was hoping and assuming that maybe that was the abandoned cemetery that he was located at. And then I made a trip over there. I live probably about 3.5 hours from his grave right now here in Amarillo. I made a trip over there, was able to track down the general area, but again, it was on private property. So I went back home and did some more searching And I found an old article in a Western magazine. It was like a cattleman's magazine. It wasn't like a historic magazine. It was kind of a ranching magazine. And anyways, I found the name of the property owner in that magazine. And God bless Facebook. I started doing some Facebook searching. And believe it or not, I had a mutual friend that was friends with the property owner. A lady that went to nursing school with my wife actually was related to the guy. So she connected me with him and his phone number. And I made another drive over there and we met up and he took me out to the site and, you know, he gave me his blessing to mark the grave. Interestingly enough, it's actually in an abandoned cemetery. So he was put in a cemetery in Milagro in 1918, the cemetery was formed and it consists mostly of the graves of children that died during the Spanish flu. And of course, then they then buried him there when he passed a few years later. So the cemetery is actually completely abandoned. The rancher that owns the property now put a fence around the cemetery to keep his cattle out of it and preserve it. But yeah, so that's how we originally came into finding that was honestly through Facebook and Google Earth, believe it or not.
But you mentioned though about the private property and there's lot of cemeteries that are on private property. What was that like walking up to the guys or the person's door, knocking on the door and being like, I need to cruise around your backyard?
Yeah. You know, I'm sure it's that way in other states. I just deal mostly with Texas and New Mexico because that's where I'm from. Those are my stomping grounds. But, yeah. You know, most of those old ranchers in New Mexico are not super excited about strangers coming and snooping around their property. So actually when I went and met him for the first time, he gave me directions to his ranch house and it wasn't overly easy to find. And, I went with me and a couple other buddies that are on my board. We went there and we met with him and he invited us in. He was a very nice gentleman and we had some coffee and, you know, for about the first hour, I could kind of tell he was feeling me out. He was asking me a lot of historical questions and just, I don't know. I think he was just trying to get a vibe for what my purpose was and if I actually was legitimate or knew what I was talking about. So we visited for about an hour and we had some coffee and I guess he was satisfied at that point in time. So that's when he gave me some directions actually on how to get to the cemetery because you actually go on a small cattle road and then you actually are just off-roading it to get to the actual site. Mm-hmm. There's not even a road that leads to it. So it was pretty cool, man. Again, you just gotta be careful with this stuff because 90% of these things are all on private property now. And these people, rightfully so, are very protective of their property and their history. So, you know, the main thing I've learned when doing this is you just got to be respectful about this and you got to go about it the right way because you'll burn a lot of bridges and people won't talk to you if you don't.
But when you got on the site and here you are, Jose Chavez, you've been thinking about him for years. He's been this person that you've been reading about, researching, and now you're at the actual cemetery. You're on the coalition website. It shows a head marker, correct? That you guys had a headstone made at your cost and placed.
Yes, sir.
What was the final result? Was the ranch owner like blown away that you went to all this? Are you good friends? You still go back and see Jose?
You know, I've been back twice to see him. So yeah, to kind of back up, man, it was just awesome. You know, there was an old photo that was taken. And again, I'm just going to guess here, probably in the 1980s of, Jose's son, that died. And at the time he was, and his name's a Hispanic name. And I'm going to butcher it. So I'm not even going to dishonor him by trying to pronounce it, but he took a photo right at the location of where his dad's headstone was, because he had actually taken the old headstone up, which I think there's photos of it on our website. I tracked the owner of it down and I was able to take that photograph and line it up with the hills in the background. And that's how we were able to put the headstone down on the exact spot that it should be on. Mm-hmm. So yeah, man, standing there is, I don't know. I don't have the words. I mean, any of you guys, and I know you go to a lot of these sites, you know, to stand there and take in the view of the same thing that these people saw and stand on the same ground, man. It's inspiring. I don't know a better word for it. So yeah, it was a very good feeling because brother, I'd spent probably 2 years worth of research finding this location and actually go out there and stand there. Man, it was just awesome. It's kind of why we do what we do. It's just such a great feeling, but yeah, it was incredible, brother. And then once we found the location, and we got his permission to mark the site, which he was glad to do. Now, honestly, he was, and this is another one of our projects we have in the future, he was actually more interested, believe it or not, in recognizing all the burials that were there from the children that died from the Spanish flu. Mm. That was actually his interest, which I totally get, and I respect that. True to my word, I told him if he would allow us to mark Chavez, that we would come back when we had raised the funds, and we would put up a memorial on that spot for all the kids that died as well. So that's actually another project that's not even on our website that we're looking into, is trying to get the names of all those children that passed. So, yeah, he was great. But again, he was actually more interested in honoring the children than what he called an old outlaw. So, sure. Yeah, it's good stuff, man.
Well, I think it's what you said, like in my travels, which is I stand there and then I'll take in the moment or take in the scenery, and I'll say, I'm looking at the same thing that they saw. I'm looking at the same hillside. There may be a freeway in the road or a road going by and a truck going by. But if you take that out, I'm seeing what they saw. I stood on the same ground that they stood on. Whatever it is. And sometimes I get emotional by it. I'm just like, holy crap. I'm seeing
it. It's a spiritual thing. It really is.
Yeah, it's crazy. But you have a lot of projects, though, because on your website, and again, it's btkcoalition.com, btkcoalition.com. I urge you to join. $35 is a membership, not a lot. And there's all sorts of stuff, cool stuff that comes with it. He's got some projects, though. Not only is Jose Chavez there, but in the Coalition Projects is a gentleman named James Carlisle. He's also doing one that's in the midst of, I'll have him explain that one, the White Oaks Project. I would assume the White Oaks is your goal is to bring everything back to the way it was during Billy the Kid's times.
Correct. Yeah, we reconstructed that. Yes, sir.
Francis Windy Cahill Project, the Tom Pickett Project, and the Coyote Spring Project, which goes back again to BTK. So how do you pick then? Are you focusing mostly on areas and locations that Billy the Kid was involved in? Is that your goal? Or is it a more personal one that these places and people hold something dear to Josh?
Well, a little bit of both, to be honest with you. So, with that in mind, Windy Cahill, I'll talk about that one because, everybody knows him as the first person that Billy the Kid killed. I don't really have any personal attachment to the guy. He was kind of a bully. Honestly, that's kind of one of the graves that we've marked that we've caught a little bit of flack over, because people kind of wonder why we wanted to recognize a guy that had, the reputation that he had. And, my short answer to that is we're not here to judge people. I mean, that's for God or wherever your faith rests, but our goal is just to preserve the history. So, Windy Cahill aside, I try my best to mark the graves of fallen law enforcement officers that also coincide with Billy the Kid history. So getting back to Jose Chavez, he was a bad man and he did some bad stuff. He went to prison for it. Most of us know the history of that. But he also did a lot of good. He was a police officer in Las Vegas for a time. He was a constable in Lincoln County prior to the Lincoln County War. He was part of Wallace's riflemen that he deputized shortly after the Lincoln County War. So my goal here, being a police officer, is to try and mark a lot of these graves of fallen officers that did not get marked. So that's the personal side of it to me. History aside, again, I just have a passion for law enforcement. That's what I do. And I just don't want to see anybody that wore a badge not be recognized for it, if that makes sense. So that's the personal side of it to me. Now, when it comes to like some of the other research I've done, like the White Oaks research and the Coyote Springs research, those are just personal interests of mine. White Oaks has always fascinated me. If you've not been down there, it's tagged as a ghost town, but it's really not. There's some people that live there, but it's a very surreal place. It's very interesting. It's almost spooky. I don't really get into the supernatural stuff too much, but it has a very weird vibe to it, and that intrigues me. So I really did a lot. I did about 2 years worth of research down in White Oaks, going through everything I could find to recreate the town as it appeared in the time that Billy the Kid wrote there. So I had an article in Wild West magazine back in the fall of last year that talked about that research and whatnot. Coyote Springs is kind of in the same wheelhouse as White Oaks, and the fact that it's actually 6 miles north of White Oaks. And if you're familiar with the history there, that's where Billy the Kid and his group at the time fled to. Mm-hmm. I say fled to. They were actually there at the time camping out, and a White Oaks posse came upon them, and there was a shootout that happened there. Billy the Kid, Billy Wilson's horse were killed. One of the posse members' horses was killed. So it was a historic location that always interested me. We haven't really got into it yet too much, but finding historic sites is really my passion, among other things, of course. And this was a site that I wanted to find. At the time, I was under the impression that nobody had been there since Fulton in the 1920s. So it was important to me to relocate it and mark it, so obviously so future generations can find it. Because, man, I've learned when doing this stuff, and we'll talk about some of the other sites too, but when doing this stuff, man, I've learned that if it doesn't get marked and documented where it's at, man, we're only about a generation away from losing it permanently. I feel like Coyote Springs was one of those. Another one is a Great House Station. I know you've had Lucas on your show before, and he helped me find that location, and had he and I not put the effort into finding that, I don't think we ever would have found it again, because he was the last person alive until we went back to it that had been to that site. So it's just important to me to save this stuff, man. I love history. It's my passion, and there's just not enough of it anymore. So yeah, that's my personal reasons behind why I do what I do. And I think it's just cool, man. I love this stuff. If I could make a living out of it, I would. But unfortunately, I haven't figured that out yet.
I think Lucas is in the same place. If he could figure out a way to turn his passion he'd retire too.
Yeah, me and Lucas have talked about this. So Lucas and I have been friends since we were teenagers, and we're both in our 40s right now. So yeah, it's just a love that we both share. And, you know, he's been a good friend because we've been able to bounce things off of one another and locations off of one another. And, yeah, man, I just can't figure out a way to pay the bills with it. I wish I could.
Well, someday. Never know.
Yeah, never know, man.
So then you've got these projects completed.
Mm-hmm.
What then is sitting out there in the future? What is floating around in Josh's head is like, man, I really want to do that one, that one, and that one.
Sure. Well, right now we're in the middle of, and we announced it a month or so ago on our YouTube show, Chasing Billy. The project that I'm in the middle of right now is the Bob Olinger grave. So, we all know Bob Olinger, of course. He was one of the deputies that was killed by Billy the Kid when he escaped from the courthouse in 1881. So he was buried originally in Fort Stanton, and that's all pretty well documented. And then, of course, from there, we really don't know, or up until recently, we didn't know where he went. So in the process of that research, I was able to determine that he was moved to Fort Stanton, along with Crawford and Bob Beckwith. Sorry, I'm trying to get my names right. So all three of those gentlemen that were all involved in Billy the Kid history were all moved by mistake to to Santa Fe National Cemetery. And they're buried there in three unknown, that's how they're labeled, graves in the National Cemetery right now. So again, there was a lot of research and work that went into locating that. And we kind of go into that in the YouTube show. Honestly, it would probably take the next 2 hours to probably explain all of it. So I don't want to bore you guys too much, but I was able to confirm through old documents that I found through the Library of Congress and in Santa Fe itself, I was able to locate where their bodies were moved to. So currently right now, the project's with the U.S. Marshals and David Turk. I'm not sure if David's ever been on your show before. I think he has, but maybe not. He's the historian for the U.S. Marshals.
Who's that?
And he had David Turk. He wrote, he's written a couple Billy the Kid books.
Nope.
I'm, No, maybe not. Okay. Well, he's the historian for the U.S. Marshals, so he currently has all of our research, and he's kind of spearheading it on from that end. I'm in contact with a couple gentlemen that are directly associated with Fort Stanton down around Lincoln, and we're working on first trying to get those graves exhumed in Santa Fe. The purpose of that is to confirm my research. We have DNA from the Ollinger family and from the Beckwith family, so that should be an easy match. And once we can confirm which grave is which, we will either leave them there, again, depending on what we're allowed to do, or ideally I'd like to relocate them back to Fort Stanton where they were originally buried, because they were moved by mistake. And, you know, I think they should rest where they were intended, back in Fort Stanton. So we'll see how that plays out. I mean, there's, when you're dealing with something all the way at the federal level, with the VA cemetery, there's just no telling how that stuff will work out or how long of a process that'll be. But that's what we're in the middle of right now. That's kind of our big project at the moment. But again, there's just no telling how long I'll be waiting to hear something from them. So we've got that going. You know, there's, of course, we do our journal every year. So I'm beginning that one. I'm in the middle of a couple projects, two books that I plan to have published by the end of this year. So I'm pretty vested in that right now. So, yeah, man, I've got more projects and more ideas than I have time or money, unfortunately.
Well, quit screwing around.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah. That's just the problem, man. You got to sleep and you got to pay the bills, and I can't get around those two things.
I hear you. When you started this, because it's kind of weird. People have a love for Billy the Kid. It's like Doc Holliday. People just love Doc Holliday or Wyatt Earp or Bat Masterson or whoever. And people love, why do you think a guy who lived in such a short amount of time is so beloved and people still talk about him? Because he didn't, other than the Bob Ollinger, like at the courthouse, the Lincoln courthouse, and the escape, he didn't have a gunfight at the OK Corral. And he didn't have a, you know, record of being a gambler like Doc Holliday or, you know, whatever it was. Whatever in history when people become, you know, enamored or a huge fan of. Why do you think Billy the Kid?
Well, you know, the answer I give to that is because Billy the Kid can be whatever you want him to be. And to explain that, you know, you have people that, you know, still go by the 20 killed 21 men and he was a dirty little SOB and, you know, and he was a thief. And then you have the polar opposite and he's viewed as a Robin Hood type character. And you know, I could make the argument either way that both sides are right. And I think that's what makes him so fascinating is, it's just not black and white. There's so much gray to his life, and there's so much room for, regardless of what you think about him, regardless of your political affiliation, regardless of whatever your stance is in history, you can find something about him and his personality that draws you to him, that attaches you to him. Again, you can, you know, if you can, you can fall back on all the interviews that were given about him, and 99.99% other than one that I can think of off the top of my head were very positive. He loved the Hispanic people. He loved the culture. He was generous to his friends. He was obviously very loyal, and that appeals to people. And even though there's been some spin to this history, he's always been portrayed as the underdog. And again, let's be honest, who doesn't love an underdog story? I mean, it's as old as time. So for that reason, there's just so many aspects to him that you just can't help but love the history. And then you throw in, you know, in 1950, you had, you know, an old timer come out and say that he was Billy the Kid, which I don't buy into all that. We could talk for days about that topic. But once you throw in the conspiracy to it and the thought that so many people believe that he lived and lived to be an old man. I mean, you add in the underdog story and you combine it with a conspiracy theory, and I mean, there's no wonder people love this stuff. It covers every facet of what intrigues people. So yeah, there's not a, and this is all my opinion, of course, but there's not an Old West character out there, or really a historic character out there that I can think of, and I like to think I'm a student of history. There's not a character out there that intrigues people or your imagination like Billy the Kid does, for all those reasons. I mean, it's why I've been, you know, I'm 45 now. I've dedicated the good part of my life to reading everything I can find on this guy. And I still feel like I don't know anything. I still learn new things every day, honestly, about him that I find when I'm digging through stuff and going through archives. And it's crazy because when you really look at his lifespan, I mean, he really did not become somebody until he killed Wendy Cahill in 1877 and he died in 1881. So we're dealing with less than 4 years mm-hmm. where he really was relevant to history, if that makes sense. Yet we're still talking about him. We're still discovering stuff. There's been over, what, 60 movies about him. There's, I don't know, I personally own about 250 books that deal directly with him. You know, how is that so from somebody that only was relevant for 4 years? But it is. I can't explain it, but it's almost magical. I don't know. I hope that kind of explains it, and I hope I don't come across as some sort of crazy fangirl, but no. it mesmerizes me, man.
No, it didn't at all. It without spending hours on it, because we don't have time.
Sure.
Why do people think that the Bushy Bill, that why do people want, there are people that want to really grasp onto the fact that he was Billy the Kid, and Billy the Kid lived a long life.
Sure. You know, two reasons. One, and again, I'll try, if I get on my soapbox, you just got to interrupt me, because anybody that knows anything about me and the work that I do and the research I do knows that I'm pretty passionate about this side of Billy the Kid's history and the fact that he did die in 1881. So again, I'll try to stay on topic, Mike. Two reasons. One, nobody wants to think that somebody is awesome and is cool and are all these things about Billy the Kid that I just described. Nobody wants to envision that story comes to a conclusion because he walked barefooted into a bedroom because he was hungry and he got shot in the dark without knowing what's going on. And it's an extremely anticlimactic ending to a fascinating story. You know, it's kind of a letdown, I guess. I mean, I don't remember what it was like because I've done this and read this for so long, but I don't remember what my impression was when I first found out how he died. But I have to imagine that if somebody picks up this story and you get to the very end and you realize this is it, this is how he dies, it's a little anticlimactic.
It sucked.
Yeah, it did. It sucked. Yeah, just to be very blunt, it sucked. It's very depressing and it's discouraging. You're like, man, you've got this awesome story. I mean, the most famous jailbreak in U.S. history, regardless of the time frame. I mean, if you can find a cooler story of when he escaped the courthouse and killed Bell and Ollinger, I mean, I'm all ears. I can't think of one. So you have this amazing story, and then it just ends by him getting shot in the dark, potentially unarmed. But yeah, it sucks. So for that reason, people want to believe that their hero, their whatever this figure is to them, they want to believe that he lived on and he did all these things that Brushy Bill claimed to do, which, again, we could spend a week talking about the Forrest Gump of the Wild West, which is what Brushy Bill claimed to be. So it makes people feel like their hero is continuing to ride on, which I get that. I from a psychological standpoint, I understand. You know, why people feel the need for that. So that's one reason why I think the Brushy Bill story continues to, I don't feel it's gaining traction. I do feel like it's petering out a little bit because there's just so many people out there now that are just pointing out so many things that just make it impossible to believe. But there'll always be those few that still believe it. But another reason is, and this is kind of where I come into play and why I catch some flack from some people, is there's just so much bad information out there. You have authors, and I promise I'm going to try to be professional, so I won't name names.
Don't name names.
But you have Brushy Bill authors out there that are just flat out lying about the history. They're telling flat out lies that are documented to show otherwise to help substantiate the story of Brushy Bill. And then you have people that don't do their own research and take these people at their word. And that's another reason why there's still so many people that side and that believe the Brushy Bill story, because they're just, and again, I mean this respectfully, they're just ignorant of the facts surrounding it. Because, you know, you can't just get your history from one book. You can't just get your history from a YouTube show or a podcast. You know, you have to do your own research. You have to take everything in. You have to look at the totality of the circumstances. And unfortunately, too many people, you know, they watch a documentary on YouTube or Netflix and they take it as gospel. So I think that's a lot of it, is people are just lazy in the fact that they want to get their history, you know, given to them quickly without any effort, and they come away with bad information, if that makes sense.
Makes total sense.
And again, that's the short, condensed version without me getting on my soapbox. So that was actually really hard for me, Mike. I want you to know that I really struggled to stay on point with that one and not get carried away.
That's all right. Well, if you're wondering who we're talking to, we're talking to Josh Slatton. And Josh, I didn't know you were an officer. I'm a huge LEO supporter. Huge LEO.
Well, thank you. Appreciate that.
Yeah. You're welcome in my home anytime. We back the blue over here in Arizona. So you're welcome.
Appreciate that, brother.
You come on over. We're talking to Josh Slatton. He is responsible for the Billy the Kid Coalition. You can find his website at btkcoalition.com. BTK, Billy the Kid Coalition.com. You can also find him on Facebook. Call at the Billy the Kids Historical Coalition, and on YouTube, Chasing Billy. So you'll see him everywhere. Good looking dude. And he's got it going on. And then on top of that, he's an LEO, so that he's welcome in my home anytime. If you haven't written a book, but you've got a couple ones, and I hope you'll come back when the books come out.
Oh, absolutely, okay. Brother. As soon as you'll have me. I've written a children's book, which I laugh about because I claim to be this serious historian, and the first actual book I published is a children's book, but hey, it just seemed right at the time. But yeah, and I announced this on our show the other day. I've got a book out now it's in the peer review process on Poe, Deputy Poe, you know, the other deputy that was there the night Billy the Kid was killed.
Yep.
He wrote his story, and it was first published in 1917 in a magazine that mostly was featured overseas. And then the book was then published in hardback version in 1919, then again in 1933, I believe. So I took that book because, again, it's such a well-written book. I don't know if anybody's not read Poe's actual account of the killing. He's a very good writer. He writes very concise. It's very concise, but in language that's easy to relate to. It's not real theatrical, right, like a lot of the writings back then. But anyways, I took that book and I kind of did, if anybody's familiar with Nolan's book that Nolan, he did on Garrett's account, Garrett's Authentic Life of Billy the Kid. Nolan took that book and of course, you know, did a lot of work to it and did some footnotes and, it was basically an annotated edition of Garrett's book. So I've taken it and I've done the same thing with Poe's book, but I've added, I mean, last time I checked, I think I'm at about 80 illustrations and photographs. Most of them have never been published before. Because the book will cover the last 3 months of the kid's life. It starts out where Poe's talking about how he goes down to White Oaks and meets Garrett in May of 1881. And then of course the kid escapes a few weeks later. So basically this is a very detailed account of the last 3 months of the kid's life. So I'm really excited about that. It should be out. I don't know. I hate to pick a date, but I'm hoping by the end of summer, maybe the fall, it'll be ready to go. Again, it's in the editing and peer review process right now. So yeah, man, I'd love to come back on and talk about that further. Okay. Once you've got a hardback copy in your hands and we can go from there. But yeah, I mean, other than that, we publish a journal every year. We've got, again, we just released our fourth one. I'm really proud of those. Most of those are our research. I tried, especially the third and the fourth one. And then the fifth one I've actually already started on. I try to make it predominantly about our research. I love a lot of the Old West publications that are out there now. My only issue with some of them is that a lot of it's just the same information rewritten, which is fine. I mean, for the casual Old West enthusiast, that kind of grabs their attention. But I wanted this to focus more on what we are doing at the Coalition. So basically what you're going to read in these journals is all new information for the most part. So, yeah, I'm really proud of those. Okay. Of course, I've got several articles in those. You know, I've got another article coming out in the Tombstone Epitaph this next month about Lost Portales and Billy the Kid's cave, with a couple never before seen photos of that location taken around the turn of the century. So I'm pretty excited about that. Again, Tascosa, I talk about that in this month's epitaph. I actually live about 30 miles south of where old Tascosa was. It's now Boys Ranch. So I go up there pretty regularly. I know that site really well. So yeah, man, I've got as many writing projects as I do grave projects, actually more, to be honest. So yeah, there's just never any shortage of stuff to do, man. I don't know how, I have a ton of respect for, WWHA. Mm-hmm. I'm a member of them, of course, and they cover, as you know, everything dealing with the Old West.
Right.
And I don't know how they do it, because I can't keep up with just Billy the Kid. So, kudos to those guys, because, you know, it's probably my favorite publication, other than Art, of course, but I'm biased, you know. But yeah, that's a great issue and a great organization. So I don't know how they keep up with it. It's just so much to do, man.
Well, I have a question for you, a last question.
Sure.
If you listen to my podcast, you might know what's coming. So you're going to have to listen very carefully.
Yes, sir.
If you could get in a time machine, go back to any period in Billy the Kid's life, see it, not get involved with it, not be a part of it, not get a photo taken with it, but see it. Maybe it'll clarify something. Maybe you've had a question about a place or something that he did. But get in a time machine and go back to a point in Billy the Kid's life. Where would you go and why?
You know, I'm almost embarrassed to tell you about how much time I've spent thinking about this very question, Mike. you know, so my guess is, and from some of the other people I've heard you ask this, most people say his death. But that's not the case for me, because I don't think the mystery behind his death is that confusing. And again, I elaborate on it in the Poe book, of course. But for me, it's his escape from the courthouse in 1881. We still don't know what happened there. So Steve Cedarwald did a CSI investigation there back in 2003, I believe, which I feel like answered a lot of questions. It showed where the blood was from Bell, and he really laid out some really good possibilities, and I tend to agree with him on a lot of them. But, man, we still don't know. We don't know for certain where he got the gun from. We don't know for certain if it was planted. We don't know, you know, could Goss have been involved as well? And there's just so much about that specific, I mean, really, let's be honest, what, 30 seconds in time between attacking Bell and, you know, killing and shooting Olinger. We just don't know exactly how that unfolded. So for me personally, that would be where I would want to go. It would, for my own curiosity and my own research, that would answer more questions for me than anything else. Because I don't think there's that much controversy, or there's a lot of controversy, but I don't think there's that much unknown about his death. People just don't like to accept it because they want something cool and fascinating. But yeah, man, the killing at the courthouse, there's so many theories and they all could be true that we just don't know. You know, did he steal Bell's gun? Was it still on Bell like the deal report says? And if he didn't take Bell's gun, where did he get a gun from? You know, you have Garrett's account, which, I find to be laughable and not very accurate. I don't know, man. But yeah, for me, it's definitely his escape from the courthouse. How about you, Mike? What's your moment, if you don't mind me asking?
For Billy the Kid?
Yes, sir.
I'm in the infancy of Billy the Kid. I'm on my I just finished my second book. But for me, I'd like to see the night that Tunstall was killed. Like, that whole scenario, the whole thing, and I would like to be there for that moment. I think it sucked. It was a horrible moment, but it defined Billy. Like I think I've read that if that moment didn't happen, would we know Billy the Kid today?
I don't think we would.
I don't think so. I really think that's a defining moment.
Yeah, that is a very, and again, there's no question behind what happened, but you're right. To actually witness that, it would be incredible. I've been to the site a few times where he was killed at, and it really is one of the most moving sites of all of them. And I've been to 100 of them, because man, there's literally nothing there. I don't know if you've been there or not, but it's just dead silence. It's in the middle of nowhere still. I mean, you have to basically take a pack mule to get to it. It's incredible. So yeah, I can't imagine to sit there and watch that incident, as brutal as it was, unfold. And, right. And then again, to create what we have now is the legend of Billy the Kid. You're right. I think it all spins from that moment right there.
Well, if you're wondering who we're talking to Josh Slatton. He is responsible for the website BTK Coalition. You can find him on Facebook at Billy the Kid's Historical Coalition and on YouTube at Chasing Billy. That's their YouTube channel. They've got all sorts of projects going on. I urge you to get into the blogs. When you go into the website, there's some blogs, and then sign up. Make sure that you sign up to get emailed updates all the time. I get those. If you want to join the coalition, it's $35 a year, and you get some cool stuff with it. And go to their store. They've got some real cool books and T-shirts and hoodies and all sorts of BTK Billy the Kid stuff that is for sale there. I urge you to do that. If you have any questions, you can ask it there on the blog, and you can probably get a hold of Josh and he'll get a hold of you and maybe answer some of those questions. But again, he runs a website called btkcoalition.com. I want to thank my friends at the Tombstone Epitaph. Mark and Eric doing a great job. And again, you can find Josh's articles in the Epitaph, one of Arizona's longest running newspapers. I urge you to subscribe and get that. Of course, my friends over at Second Family at the Wild West History Association at wildwesthistory.org. If you want more history, you can find the WWHA on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook. They're in all three locations. And if you want a little bit of history during your business day, WWHA is also on LinkedIn. So you can go on LinkedIn and you get some cool history during your business day. If you want to get a hold of me, very easy to do so. You can find me on Instagram and Facebook and YouTube at Cochise County_travels. I urge you to follow those two places. And then if you really like the podcast, please leave a rating and a review. It does help with distribution. You can find the podcast on iTunes, on Spotify, iHeartRadio, Podbean, Stitcher, anywhere that you listen to podcasts, you can find it. Please leave a rating and review. And if there's a subscribe button, hit the subscribe button. It does help with distribution. If you want to find the podcast before anybody else, then go to Spotify and subscribe, because I release them to Spotify first. And they may sit there for a couple of days before I release them, but you can listen to them before it gets released out to anybody else. They go to Spotify first. You can, again, if you want more information about me, find me everywhere on social media at Cochise County_travels. You have anything else, Josh, anything before we go?
No, I mean, you kind of covered it, brother. Just, yeah, I'd appreciate if everybody goes to the website, checks it out. Again, everything that we sell on there or membership dues goes 100% to funding these headstones. And when I say projects, literally, I mean the headstones. Each headstone, anywhere between $1,500 and $2,000. It's expensive. What we don't raise, we pay for out of our own pockets. So any help you guys can give us is very much appreciated. Check us out. Shoot me an email if you have any questions at all. I'll answer anything I can for anybody. A lot of people are interested in these historic sites, and I've helped a lot of people plan trips and whatnot. So if there's anything y'all want see and I can help you get there, please shoot me an email and I'll do the best I can to help y'all out.
Well, I'm kind of disappointed that I got to take a pack mule to John Chunsell's site. I was hoping that you were, by now you had graded a road up to it so I could just drive my truck up, park, and see it and get back in my truck and leave.
Well, yeah, I'm probably being a little dramatic with a pack mule. You know, a pickup truck will work. So, yeah, I like to be a little dramatic. So, yeah, probably not a pack mule. If you got a pickup truck, Mike, we can make it happen, brother. Yeah, you need to go see that site, man.
Okay.
It's amazing. Shoot me an email, brother, ask, and I'll get you some good directions, and we'll get you to it next time you're in that area.
Okay. Done. Done deal. All right, folks, cool. I appreciate you, as always. Safe travels, and we'll see you soon.